Hello and welcome to a podcast brought to you by The Religion of Aston Villa.
We're a social media account on Twitter and Facebook that wants to get our voices out there and heard, so please join us.
Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode. It has been a bit of a distance between this one and the last one, but we just tried to get, you know, a couple of games in together. So we are going to be discussing the Leeds win, the West Ham defeat, and the upcoming Arsenal. And as always, Callum's going to go through his loan watch and what's been happening in the world of Villa players outside of Villa. So starting off, we're going to go, obviously, in order of when they played. So Leeds is up first. Lineup. What do you think of it? Because obviously Chambers come in. Dean was recalled, and obviously Ings and Watkins up front. So what do you think?
I think we pretty much predicted it, didn't we? We said that Dean would come in for Young as a, you know, proper designated left back, and Chambers deserved to keep his space. You know, from the Southampton game, and you know, it paid off massively because, you know, if we going into the game, apart from probably a 15-minute spell in the second half, we were probably the better team and the best team of the night. So, lineup was fine. You know, Leeds, their manager had come out and said that they knew that we were going to play that diamond. Obviously, they thought they did. Even though we did play the diamond, they couldn't stop the diamond. Obviously, you look at the Leeds team, there's a few players missing, probably helped us. And they've, I mean, it was his second game in charge, first game at home. There was a lot of square pegs and round holes in the Leeds team, and it, you know, it benefited us massively.
Yeah, exactly that. And I mean, you know, going into the first half, I thought we looked quite good, to be fair, especially leading up to the first goal, you know, which did come after 22 minutes. Little Phil, he had the ball struck, as it was, to give us a lead. To be fair, I thought we did really well up to the first goal. But yeah, I mean, what do you think going up to the first goal? Do you think we was on top? Do you think we... Yeah, so what was your opinion of it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely for the first half, we were definitely the team on top. And like you said, the ball was struck off, struck, is it? Whatever in it?
Yeah, I've gone for struck just because it works. It struck off struck. So.
Yeah. You know, it's well played by Cash to recycle the ball that was crossed in from Lukey Dean. You know, there's possible shouts of penalty, but that gets waded away as Coutinho scores. That kind of kept us going. You know, there was chances after that. You know, there's a lovely build-up and a lovely, you know, play and integrating passes that, you know, just off being a goal or making a massive chance, like the McGinn chance later on in the half, saved by Melier. But we just looked in kind of cruise control in the first half, and we always seemed a threat going forward. And the first half, you've got to say that Leeds didn't, compared to second half. Obviously, they came out a bit more, but you know, it could have easily been we could have added another, which would have been nice to go in 2-0 up at half time, because you know, we've said on here before that 1-0 is a dangerous lead. And luckily enough, we got through to half time. I think that was the main thing, really, to get to half time in the lead. But we knew that the second half was going to be tough, and it turned out to be for the first 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, I mean, just at the half time stats, I thought that it was quite interesting because we had six total shots, four on target, and they had literally zero total shots. zero off target and obviously zero on target, and they had zero blocked as well. So it kind of shows you that we was on top quite comfortably. Normally I do ask the question, we make any substitutes, but pretty much it's always been a no, so I'm going to ditch that idea of asking the question, because obviously was on top as well. But to be fair, the second half, the first half of the second half was all Leeds. I thought they come out looking really strong, and I thought it was quite frustrating from us, because we played so well in the first half, and then in the second half they just come at us gun blazing, and it was for a good amount of time, I think until about the 60th minute, I think it was, where they pulled off a save, and I think it was an Ings and Coutinho work. But then it went to complete disaster for Leeds, and we've got our second from Matty Cash, which was an absolute brilliant finish, to be fair. So, yeah, what do you take it up until the, and including the second goal?
Yeah, it was definitely a riding the storm. Leeds chucked everything and the kitchen sink at trying to get something back into the game. But I think Martinez, the save that he had to make was late on. But I thought that his, commanding of the area was fantastic that game, all throughout. He stopped their crosses, stopped their chances, really. Kind of just plucking it out of the air in the six-yard box or penalty area. So, I think Martinez has got a lot to say in that. With Leeds not creating any chances, but also down to the defence. They didn't really make many chances. I think they only made, four shots in the entire game. We were happy for them to hold possession for a bit, because, we were setting up to go full pelt ourselves. And in the end, we picked our chances, and we were able to, frustrate Leeds with the... and possibly have the ref on our side a little bit with when it comes to decisions with fouls and things like that. So that annoyed them as well. So maybe that was a kind of a mental thing. And then Danny Ings with an absolute pinpoint diagonal.
Brilliant.
Matty Cash. Well, I mean, Cash's touch kind of makes that goal in a way. And he sells... what's the defender's name? Is it Firpo?
Yeah.
Send him off to the shops, and then I'm surprised he hits it where he does, because the keeper's right there, and luckily enough it goes through the keeper, scenes in the away end, celebrates in front of the fans, and at that point it was kind of like, oh well, we can take this game to them now. And it's been quite a long time since we can say that we've won comfortably at Leeds and gone away feeling, oh yeah, we've actually, we've gone there, done the business, and sat in fourth gear for the last bit. So it was up to that point, we'd ridden the storm and we'd come out of it better off. So,
yeah, no, I totally agree. And we literally, that goal come, the second goal come, and like you said, is we did ride the storm up until then, but then you could just tell that Leeds knew it was pretty much done and dusted, which then obviously brings us on to probably one of the goals of the season for the league, let alone for Villa, was an absolute finish from Callum Chambers. Genuinely, it was so good. Like, to finish in the top corner as well, there's no way he's doing a better strike in the rest of his career, or he's ever made a goal like that in his career, because that was absolutely unreal. So what do you think of the goal?
I mean, it's just, you can't put it into words, really. I mean, he must be so, so happy with it. I know he's meant it, but I bet he's not thought it would go right in the top corner. It's like he's just swung a leg just because, oh, fuck it, kind of thing. And it's ended up top corner. I saw a lot of people on Twitter be like, well, Mings looked offside, so why wasn't VAR looked into? Well, it actually comes off a Leeds defender. Tries to head it beyond everyone, and when the original ball is played, Mings is onside, and then Chambers whacks it in, and it doesn't matter whatever angle you look at it, and I've looked at a few angles at it, it's still a fantastic goal, and it should definitely be up there for goal of the season. We would expect that kind of goal from a Coutinho or Wendy and players like that, but to say it's your centre half, Callum Chambers. He really wanted his place in the team, and you know, he's deserved it over the last few performances. The Southampton and Leeds one, an assist and a goal in two games for a centre back. You can't get much better than that. And you know, after that, you know, we had what, 20 minutes left, and it was kind of like, oh well, let's just tone it down a little bit, like we did against Southampton, and you know, kind of save the legs kind of thing after that. And there wasn't really much to it after that, I don't think. Obviously, there was a few kind of half chances, but that was about it, really.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, there was nothing to really shout about after that, which we ain't going to complain about. And just looking at back at the stats after the game, like I said, that Leeds had zero total shots in the first half. So the full-time total shots was four, which obviously would have all come in the second half. So that kind of shows you that they did, you know, they did come at us a lot more in the second half, which is where we talked about weathering the storm. Nonetheless, 3-0, comfortable win. Been against a bogey side, it was finally good to get one over them. It feels like forever and a day since we last beat Leeds. Swiftly to the ratings, like I say, because we've got three games to talk about. Can I have your player ratings, please, for Martinez, Cash, Chambers, Mings and Luca Dean?
He can. So we'll have Martinez an 8, because he just took everything out of the air. And he only had to make one save, and that save was straight at him. So, back-to-back clean sheets for him as well. So, good for his stats. Then we'll have Cash, another assist and a goal. So, 9, probably near enough to a 10. Chambers, a 9 because of the goal. Mings a 9 because you know, he came out on Twitter and said he loves the banter and stuff like that, but you know, if you have a whole home crowd chanting your shit and then, you know, put that kind of a performance in and then clap them afterwards, it's just hilarious. And then Luke Dean, probably a 7. You know, that's only because, you know, he's not got a goal and assist. He still had a fantastic game, but there was no you know, goal contribution, so that's why it's only a 7.
9 for Martinez, 9 for Cash, man of the match, 9 for Mings, who was superb. Chambers an 8, nothing bad against him, but yeah, he was good, but I thought Mings was surreal. I thought he was proper captain's performance. And Luca Dean, I gave a 7. I'm still expecting big things from him, to be fair. Especially with Target ripping it up at Newcastle, sadly. Midfield of McGinn, Louise and Ramsey.
McGinn was back to his best for that game. I think he kind of likes that kind of environment, you know, a tough, gritty kind of midfield battle.
Yeah.
So he gets an 8. Then Louise, a 7. He's still not all there. And I'll give Ramsey a 7, but it would be a 6.5 if we did do half ratings. Another quiet performance from him as well.
7 for McGinn, 7 for Louise. I thought he was better, being one of his better performances. And Ramsey, give a 6. I think he needs to be dropped. Well, I thought he should have been dropped for West Ham, but I kind of understood the whole don't change your winning side. But yeah, there we go. Coutinho, Danny Ings and Watkins, please.
Coutinho, I'm going to give an 8. Ings, an 8. And then Watkins, a 7. You know, endless amount of running. It was just unfortunate that everyone else around him got goal contributions.
Yeah, I agree with those ratings. Yeah, I agree with that. And the substitutes, Sanson, Buendia and Ashley Young.
I'm actually going to give Sanson and Buendia both a 7. I thought they were very good when they come on. Like you, I was kind of in the camp before the West Ham game for Sanson to start. But again, you don't change a winning team kind of thing. And just to say that we've got those kind of players on the bench ready to come on is much better than where we were, you know, 2 years ago, for example. And then Ashley Young. Well, he wasn't on for long, so I'll give him 5. Why not?
Yeah, I thought Buendia looked quite good when he came on. So yeah, I agree with your ratings again. Like I said, I wanted to see Sanderson start, and I'm chasping at the bit to see him get a full 90 because every time he comes out, he seems to give his all. Even if it's just a cameo or, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, that's all he seems to be getting. But he seems to be, you know, trying to get at the bit. So hopefully, I won't say we'll see him for West Ham. Obviously, we didn't, but hopefully for Arsenal, we do. Next game is obviously the 2-1 defeat to West Ham, which happened Sunday, today, as of recording. So, as always, we start with a lineup, which obviously was unchanged from Leeds. And as we both mentioned, we did want to see a couple of freshens up. But I kind of understood why you wouldn't change a winning side. Not many managers do it. And I've seen a few people moan about it, looking back with 2020 vision, you know, saying that we should have made changes. Obviously, we should have done. But I think the same goes, if we did make changes, you'd question why you would change a winning side. So from you, from your point of view, obviously it's quite hard to say now the game's over. But before kickoff, was you expecting, or did you think it would be the same?
I think it would have been the same because obviously it was a winning side, and you know, from near enough the last three games, it was near enough the same side. You know, with only Chambers and Dean swapping out for a few times, but I mean, I was wanting. Well, only one change really, and that was Sanson, like we've covered. But you know, I understand it, but you know, at the same time, you can tell by the end of the game, a few players were, you know, needed a week off because that's the third game in a week, and you could tell by the end of it to kind of give the game away already.
Yeah, I mean. I wanted some changes. I thought maybe Sanson might be the only one because I thought Rams had been quite poor for the last couple of games. So I thought maybe that would be the one change that he might do. Obviously, question marks whether Konsa's going to be slipping straight back in, which obviously he didn't, which I was happy for because Chambers deserved his spot. But yeah, I mean, there wasn't much, you know, there was nothing, no changes at all, which is fine. When I saw the kickoff, and I understood, but as you said, it's three games in a week. You could tell by full time that, you know, that they was needed. Anyways, going to the first half, there was, you know, the main talking point for the early doors was obviously a substitute with Luca Dean going off and getting replaced for Ashley Young. So, which is a shame. I haven't heard of anything being bad or good. I heard that he's going to have a scan. That was probably the biggest news I saw, but you know, it's quite a shame that the one player we let go in Matty Target, you know, we probably could do with now if he's out for a long period of time. Any thoughts on Luca Dean or anything you want to say?
I think it's they believe it could be a reoccurring or a recurrence on the injury that he had last time, which is a hamstring kind of problem. It looked like that's what he was holding anyway. Now we've got to get by with no recognised left back. We have a week off, so it, you know, if he's felt it early, maybe he's caught it early enough that he's just rest it and then he'll be back. I suppose it's kind of lucky that we're only going to miss him for probably one game, with it being international break after the Arsenal game. But it could be a lot worse than we think, and you know, he could be out for 6 weeks. We just never know, or we don't know at the moment yet. Anyway, do we? So yeah. I mean, first half. I mean, the whole game was just a tale of, you know, if things were a little bit closer, or you know, so I saw someone say a game of inches, because you had Ings' shot tipped onto the post, you had the Coutinho chance that could have been tackled into their own net, I think both of them were in the first half, weren't they? So it just seemed to be a massive, like, end-to-end type of game. And every time we did make chances, but we just didn't. It was just one of those games where we kind of just didn't turn up fully. And, you know, we can't be dealing with that. And especially, you know, it could have been a massive game today to gain 3 points on West Ham. I mean, I'm not saying we could have caught them, but to say we would have been on 39 points, you know, we'd be 6 points off Spurs in eighth. And that'd be ridiculous, you know, thinking back a few weeks' time. You say that we were 6 points off Spurs, you know, kind of five games ago, you'd be thinking, what are you on, mate? You know, so unfortunately, it hasn't happened. You know, we still sit in a nice position. But I think Gerrard said that, you know, we just didn't turn up. And I was, you know, key moments went against us is what he said. But I was hoping that, you know, West Ham's Europe games would have put a little bit of a different side out. You know, it was only Bowen that missed. And, you know, they'll pay the price for it now with two of their players going off injured as well.
Well, that first off, I will say that I when we went in at half-time, I felt kind of gutted a little bit because I thought the best chances of that half was ours. I mean, we could have easily been 2-0 up, as you mentioned, you know, the Coutinho chance especially. I think Watkins had a decent opportunity too. You know, there was a 2, 3, 4 chances where we could have, you know, gone 1-0 up, maybe 2. And it was just a shame that it didn't happen. And it just kind of felt that, you know, second halves, we're never the best at, to be fair. Second half always seems to go against us. And this was no different. So going into the second half, you could feel pretty much off the bat, you know, open doors, that was on the front foot, and we was a bit behind. I mean, there was a chance, I think around the 56th minute, something like 57th minute, I've written down here, where Danny Ings, you know, should have done better, in my opinion. But, you know, other than that, I was struggling to think, you know, within the first, you know, the first half or the second half, where, you know, it was anything to do with us, because after that, we had the one where, in all fairness, Dawson should have got a goal, where Martinez pulled off a brilliant save from Kurt Zouma, and then Dawson I don't know how he missed from about 2 yards.
I think it's Martinez pushing it out too hard. I think that's how he doesn't miss. How he misses. I think Martinez palms it out in a way that Dawson can't get over the ball in time because it's so close to him.
Yeah.
You know, and also looking back at the first half, I don't know what your opinions are on it, but for me, I thought that, who was the player? Was it Lanzini should have been sent off?
Oh, I was going to come to those at the end because obviously there was the Chambers elbow and the and the Lanzini kick to Douglas Luiz. See, I had this debate because I've put a still up of it on Twitter asking is this a red card? And I'm kind of getting 50-50 splits. Now, in my opinion, I always try and look at it from if it was the other way around. So if Luiz had done that to Lanzini, do I think it would be a red? Yes, I do. And the reason is, just in my personal opinion, and I know some people like the games to carry on and they like the traditional old school football and stuff like that, but I think if anyone's foot is chest height or higher, it's dangerous play. And that, like, literally, I know I've had a few people say if his studs were showing, he would have been showing a red. That shouldn't matter. Do you know what I mean? Studs showing or not showing, it's still dangerous. And I think if anyone's foot is chest height or higher, it should be a red card. It should be instant because it's dangerous, especially with a lot of in today's game where there's a lot of focus on head injuries and things like that. Now, I understand that Luiz did kind of come from behind Lanzini. So Lanzini was going for the ball. It wasn't intentional. But there's still no reason to have your foot that high. So I think it was a red. What about you?
I mean, my first intention was a red. And, you know, watching the replays, I mean, there is that thing that, you know, I put the same thing on Twitter. On Facebook. And it's the same, you know, 50-50 views on it. And it's a lot of people saying, oh, well, he's come from Lanzini's blind side and
yeah,
this and that. But, you know, it catches him in pretty much, you know, the same kind of place that like Nelson Oliveira got from Mings. I know Mings was a kind of accidental stamp, but his head, his foot is his, you know, clearly what, five, well, I don't know how tall Luiz is, but, you know, it's a decent height that it could do some pretty bad damage. And luckily enough, Luiz was able to carry on with it. So, you know, there's one aspect that you think, oh, Christ, that Luiz is all right. But in another way that, you know, how has he stayed on the pitch? And I think West Ham did kind of like that kind of thing today, because, you know, there was a bit like Rice on Coutinho and just little
Dawson on Chambers. Is that who did Chambers, where he kind of got past him and then he did a little cheeky elbow?
Yeah, so I think it was in all the kind of players' heads from there on out, kind of thing.
Yeah, and then the Ings one as well. I thought that was a yellow where he allowed play on, where I think I can't think who took it. Ings got the better of somebody, took the ball off him, and then the guy pretty much just pulled Ings to the ground and allowed play on. And I was like, you're joking. He's got the ball at his feet. He's not even got the ball. So, yeah, there was quite a lot of dirtiness by that West Ham side. There was. It felt like a proper derby with some of the challenges. Into second half, as I said, that, you know, pretty much we get to the substitute of Bailey, which, in my opinion, ties into the Yarmolenko goal because he didn't track back at all. Now, I'm not going to sit and say I want anybody to score against Villa. I'm not, but I will say that you being obviously what's happening in the world and Yarmolenko being Ukrainian, how much he, like the emotion behind his celebration, and obviously the goal itself we just didn't deal with at all. It was a good finish, you know. You know, cannot knock that finish at all. It was brilliant. But like I say, Bailey didn't track back. He kind of just stood there and watched it happen, which is why I brought his substitution in. But from, you know, outside of football, just how upset he got and emotion, you could just tell how much it meant to him. So obviously I don't want anybody to score against Villa, but if it was going to happen, I'm kind of happy it was something like, you know, with what's happening. Maybe he's got family, I'm going to guess, over there, and friends. So maybe it was good for him to score. So just want to throw that there. Obviously, I still would love to have stuffed him and put, you know, as many goals past him as possible. But if it was going to happen, then, yeah, like I say, it was just the emotion behind it was good to see. So what do you think of the Yarmolenko goal and what we did wrong?
I mean, it was well taken, you know, because it's fizzed into him. And he's taken a touch and he's just hit it straight away. The problem there is that he's got too much time on the ball. So he's not got a marker. I don't actually know who his marker is without looking back at it right now. But, you know, the both goals seemed a bit too easy, really. He was only on the pitch because Antonio went off with a suspected injury. So, you know, if Antonio had stayed on, there's a possibility that goal doesn't happen. So, yeah, it's just a bit of a frustrating one defensively, that one. But, you know, when we come against better teams and better opposition, you know, they'll find a way to score. And West Ham unfortunately did. And that really took the stuffing out of us, that did.
Yeah, exactly that. And to be fair, I said before the goal that it was coming, because they were all over us. There was pressing high. There was winning every second ball. There was recycling. And then as soon as that happened, I literally said, game over. No point even. I mean, obviously, I did watch it, but I kind of made like a tongue-in-cheek that there's no point watching it because we're not going to come back, because obviously it was our first conceded goal in four. And obviously then Declan Rice just shows you what an absolute top-quality defensive midfielder can do for a side. He just completely run through the midfield like they hot knob through butter. Literally, I can't believe how well he did. I mean, he's not the quickest player in the world, but he just kind of coasted past everybody. And it just shows you, A, how poor our midfield is, and B, is why we are desperate for a defensive midfielder. Like, what is it, 5-6 windows now, we've not signed a top-quality defensive midfielder, and it showed. And hopefully, out of anything that today's game brought, I hope that shows why we need one desperately, because yeah, that was old. I know Fornell scored, but yeah, that Declan Rice run was unreal to run through a whole midfield. What do you think, and what we did wrong on the Fornell goal?
Well, the second goal is actually, I think it starts off with Bailey trying to get a foul.
Yeah, it did.
Which there, you know, never was. So, you know, that's him trying to gain an advantage and it doesn't work out. Rice then takes it away. And I thought Ben Rama was good, and it's someone that we missed out on. You know, he got both assists for today's game. And like I said, someone that we missed out on. What was it? Last summer.
Billy, I can't believe we missed out on him, especially with him being a big Dano player. I still don't understand.
And then, you know, we kept on going. So I suppose that's got the right mentality there. But, you know, the goal comes too late. And it's a lovely take by Ramsey. And it's nice that Buendia did well for the goal as well. You know, basically dummying three defenders in one move. And, you know, that's the substitutes making an impact again, you know. Especially, you know, Buendia. So a lot of people wanting him to come back into the team against Arsenal, but we'll have to see about that. I think if the goal comes 5 minutes earlier, possibility of us getting a second. It's just a shame that it was literally 89th, 90th minute. So, yeah, we tried to fight back, but there was just not enough minutes left in the game for that to happen.
Yeah, exactly like you said. Is that Buendia? I mean, the substitute changed the game. I thought Buendia and Bailey was surreal. They were so good. I know, like I say, pretty much both West Ham goals come off the back of Bailey, you know, A, not tracking back, and then B, trying to get a foul that wasn't a foul. You know, he is a luxury player that, you know, we are lucky to have. But at the same time, is when you're trailing anyways, well, I wouldn't say we're trying at the time, but, you know, when you bring him on, he's not going to do the dirty work. He's not that type of player. So you have got to kind of compensate for that. And we didn't do that. But yeah, Bailey should have done better for both. But, you know, he did turn it on, and it was he helped contribute to that goal. I know Buendia did an absolute surreal run, did a little dinky passes. You know, everyone was screaming, including myself, at him to shoot and score. But he made such a great choice. And, you know, even though I didn't want Ramsey to start, it was such a thunderbolt of a finish. You cannot knock him at all. And like you said, if that we was on top then for the last 5-6 minutes. But, you know, the game was gone. You know, it's very rare that Villa will get 2 goals in 5 minutes. But it does keep it, you know, food for thought for the Arsenal game with Bailey and Buendia, arguably in the little time they had on the pitch to, you know, make a case to start. So it is going to be interesting to see what his lineup will be in the Arsenal one. But I'm sure me and you will have a go at guessing what it is shortly. Any other thoughts before we move into the player ratings?
I thought today, we'll touch on lastly, you know, the league table and the games around us actually went our way. You know, Southampton and Leicester,
thankfully, yeah,
both lost. It would have been nice for Leeds to keep a draw. Instead, they got a late minute winner, which, you know, would have been nice to spice up the bottom of the table a little bit more. But we stay ninth, a game in hand on Southampton. Obviously, Leicester have got 2 games in hand on us, but I believe one of them's against Chelsea. So, you know, we'll see about that one. Good thing is goal difference doesn't go down that much from today. So there's that. But I'm trying to just pick up positives that any way we can. But, I mean, if you look at the table, really, and say that we are, we're 15 points off fourth, it doesn't seem that far away, you know. And if you said seventh, which is a Europa Conference League, that's only 10 points,
yeah.
10 points with a game in hand. So our game in hand's against Burnley, though, isn't it?
And yes,
they'll be wanting to get every single point that they can, but they're in a bit of a rut at the moment. So hopefully we can play them at a decent time. So, you know, anything could be possible. You know, I saw a few fans say, oh, well, if we can get to the same amount of points as last season, then that's a positive. But we've got 10 games left. I could probably say three of them are winnable, with Norwich, Burnley and Palace. You possibly could take a point against Wolves and Leicester, and that's about it. You know, we've got five of the top, five of the top eight to play. So
I know.
It's a tough run-in, but, you know, we can only do the best that we can, and hopefully, you know, that winter break, that international break, and now the luxury of basically playing every game, one game at a time, and, you know, one game per week, it should help us out in the long term as well. So, yeah, the league table-wise, we're looking happy, even though it's a loss. Ninth, still in the top half. And I think if you said, oh, we'll finish ninth now for the end of the season, I'd take ninth, definitely.
Oh, yeah, I'd 100% take ninth. And like you say, looking at the league table, the anything that's a big concern, obviously it's not fully Gerrard, because obviously this includes Dino's time, especially that bad run. But there's only six teams who've lost more games than us this season. And coincidentally, that is the bottom six. Brentford, Leeds, Everton, Watford, Burnley and Norwich. And, you know, to say how bad Everton are, we've only lost two less than Everton. And we've to be fair, probably because they've got a game in hand on us, but Burnley have actually lost less games than us, which is, you know, to say they're 19th, kind of shows you where we are. You know, we are still in a transition period. And on the flip side of that, obviously we are ninth, as you can see, but we are actually ninth for the most wins as well. So we are in the win ratio, we are exactly where we're meant to be. But that losses does need to be, you know, it needs to be, if anything, to draws, because Burnley, as I said, they've only lost two less than us, but they've drawn nine more than us. So in that retrospective, you know, I wouldn't mind taking Burnley's draws, because that's quite a lot. That's, you know, 12 points extra, which takes us above Wolves. So, yeah, like I say, there is work to be done, and we are going to play Arsenal, who are absolutely flying at the moment, who you said are in fourth, and we're not a million miles away. But like you said, we are playing quite a lot of the top eight coming up, and I believe we've only picked up one win against the top eight this season. But don't quote me on that. I'm sure I saw a little stat earlier about that. And I'll try and refine it before the end of the podcast. So, yeah, player ratings. So, same as before, Martinez, Cash, Chambers, Mings and Luca Dean.
I mean, I don't think you can give many marks out here. I think I'll have to go for... Oh, well, should we just discount Dean and put in Young?
Yeah, go on then. You might as well.
I mean, I think they're all going to get a five, apart from Martinez, who I'll give a six, because, you know, he always loves to keep us, or to try and keep us in the game as best as he can.
Yeah, I agree with their ratings. And sorry, I've just found that little stat. We played 11, won one, drawn one, lost nine against the current top eight. So going into the Arsenal game in a minute. Surely, it's not good reading. But yeah, for your ratings, I completely agree. Yeah, we'd have to take Luca Dina, because obviously he only played 9 minutes, unfortunately. I'm going to go McGinn, Louise and Ramsey.
McGinn, 6 would be 6.5 if we did half ratings. You know, one of the battlers of midfield, so... He deserves a bit more points. Louise a 5, back to kind of his normal self kind of thing. And then Ramsey, I'll give a 7, but only because he scored. Otherwise, you're probably looking at a 5 again. It was, you know, but he was in the right place at the right time for the goal. So, yeah, I'll give him a 7.
5 for Louise, 6 for McGinn, 6 for Ramsey. He scored, but it doesn't take away the fact that it was a very poor performance. He did a good bit in the first half where he passed the ball, and I think it was for Coutinho when he should have scored. So he probably should have got an assist. but Coutinho was trying to be a bit too cheeky for me. But yeah, six, I thought he was invisible. To be fair, the whole midfield was invisible. Like I said, for that Declan Rice run, just all at blame for that. Coutinho, Danny Ings and Ollie Watkins.
I have to admit though, Ings and Watkins were running like madmen out there. You know, they were putting a big shift in, just unfortunate that they couldn't be found. Saying that, they didn't create much, and when they did, they wasn't taken. So, I mean, I'll give both of them a six. And then Coutinho, I would give 6.5, but we don't do half rating, so I'll do a six again.
I gave them all a six. I thought they didn't get much support from the midfield, which is a huge issue. And they, like I said, the attacking options looked a lot better when the substitutes come on. They just never looked to be scoring. I know Ings had a couple of chances, Watkins too, but it just never felt like they was going to score, if that makes sense. So I gave them all a six. Obviously, for the substitutes, we're not going to really count it because Young pretty much did play much the full 90. So, Buendia and Bailey, please.
I'll give Bailey a 5 just because of the issues that we talked about earlier on. And then Buendia a 6 because he's really trying to push for a place or a starting place in the team. And he got an assist in his short time on the pitch as well.
I gave Bailey a 6. Like I said, I know it was shortfall for the goals. You know, it was kind of, he wasn't at fault, but, you know, he didn't help the issue. But the attacking wise went up a lot when he come on. And there was a chance where he had a thunderous strike and Fabianski held it like hot potato because it struck him that hard. And Buendia, I gave an 8. My man of the match for in a Villa shirt, got an assist. And literally, He come on at what, the 80th? He had literally, 10 minutes and he got an assist and we was on the front foot as soon as he stepped on the pitch. He was superb. So I gave a 8 for young Buendia. And the third part of the podcast, like I say, it is a bit of a long one, is the upcoming Arsenal fixture. Obviously, as I said, Arsenal are flying at the moment. 2-0 victory against Leicester today. So yeah, I mean, how do you line up against them? Who you got?
I mean, it's tough to say really because it could really be unchanged again. I think Ramsey may have kept his place because he scored. I can possibly see him going one up top.
I would.
It didn't work. You bring back Buendia and Coutinho behind Watkins. Unfortunately, the midfield picks itself, I think, unfortunately. Even with, you know, I mean, Ramsey scored, but you can't bring anyone else in for Louise unless you play Chambers as a 6 and bring Konsa back in, maybe an option. And, you know, at the time of recording, you would expect Young to go back into the team at left back. And then I can't remember the youth player's name. Is it Ben Christian?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
He'd probably come onto the bench to fill that left-back role on the bench. Or, you know, you might see a few more youngsters on the bench next week. And, you know, the only good thing is that we know we're back at home. We'll have the home support. You know, and Arsenal actually have a midweek game as well against Liverpool, so that won't be easy for them. So, but I said that against West Ham, and that didn't help us in the end. So we'll have to see. It could be unchanged, or it could be Buendia comes in for Ings, midfield stays the same, or Chambers comes into 6 and Konsa comes back in. It will just be one of those where we'll have to wait and see because at the moment it's kind of unpredictable because, you know, when Gerrard has said, we'll make changes, he's not. When we'll make drastic changes, it's only been 1 or 2. So we will really have to see and wait till 11:30 when team news is out because it's an early kickoff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be Yeah, I think Buendia is going to play himself back in, if I'm honest. I would like to say Bailey has as well, but then you're looking around, you're thinking, you're making changes. I mean, you could maybe go Bailey instead of Ings or instead of Watkins and play him, you know, through the middle, you know, with some blistering pace against White and Gabriel, maybe. Or like you said, he just bring Buendia on Coutinho to play behind Watkins or Ings. I would probably like to see Ings start in front of Watkins if I've got to pick one. I just think that, you know, we're going to have very few chances against a very good back four or five because Ramsdale's in good form as well. So I think we need to make him count. And I think Ings is my pick if I'm going with it. But yeah, me personally, I'd like to see Buendia and Coutinho behind Ings. And then, you know, whichever way it's going, Watkins and Bailey to come on as me option, you know, my plan B. But like you say, as of recording, I'm going to assume Young is going to be making a start. And I think Chambers, to be fair, Chambers and Mings pretty much didn't do much wrong for the goal. I mean, people blame Mings for the second one, that he was stood in front of Martinez. But how was he supposed to know Martinez is directly behind him? So, yeah, I don't think there's going to be many changes, if any, like you said, maybe just the one.
I'm just thinking while you've been speaking about your lineup, but what about going back to a 4-2-3-1? You have Coutinho on the left, Buendia as a 10, and then Bailey on the right, kind of thing, behind Ings or Watkins, because that's the kind of style Arsenal play. They do like to play a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. So if we try and match them, I mean,
Who are you dropping from midfield? If we went Bailey, Coutinho, Buendia, which I love the sound of, who would your midfield two be?
Louise and McGinn.
And you drop Ramsey.
If it had to be one of the players to drop, it would be, Ramsey.
I quite like that. I quite like that idea. To be fair, I would love to see, I'm going to say it again, but I'd love to see Sanson start next to McGinn and then have, because Sanson, like I say, if you look at some of his interception passes and defensive side, he can actually play. I'm not saying he's an out-and-out defensive midfielder, not at all. But, you know, he does put a shift in and he does love a tackle. So I wouldn't mind seeing Sanson McGinn. And then Bailey, Buendia, Coutinho, and then like Ings or Watkins. I'd probably settle with Ings. Settle with Watkins just so because he can play a bit more. You know, he does a lot more run about and pressuring. What Ings is, I wouldn't say a goal hanger, but you get my point. Like, it's just his whole game is to score goals and not much else. So, you know, and have him kind of like and have Bailey, Coutinho, Buendia, and Watkins kind of switch up front, if that makes sense, and just kind of get them free flowing. But as you said, Arsenal do love a 4-2-3-1, so I wouldn't mind matching them and going toe to toe, man for man. Because as much as they are on good form, I think on paper, and I know it's on paper and not on grass, but our 4-2-3-1, if we had Bailey, Coutinho, Buendia, Watkins, isn't that far behind Martinelli, Odegaard, Saka, and Lacazette. Would you agree with that?
That's a bit controversial. I don't know. But one interesting kind of fact is that Emile Smith-Rowe might be back fit in time for the game.
He'll score.
So that is a big boost for Arsenal, definitely. And someone that we looked at to buy as well and missed out on. So, yeah, like you said, he's probably guaranteed to score or set the world alight. So we'll have to see about that.
Is there any... Obviously, I'll ask the question, how do you think it's going to go? But on top of how you think it's going to go, is there anything that you think we need to be concerned with? Because I genuinely, like... Odegaard had a good game against Leicester today. Thomas Partey obviously scored. Granit Xhaka's just dirty, and we struggle against the dirty players, if I'm honest. But yeah, I mean, how do you think it's going to go? And is there any people, you know, we should be concerned with?
Well, since the start of this year, Arsenal have had 4 red cards. So that, you know, in all competitions, so that might play to our advantage, you know, who knows. But they have liked to make games hard for themselves, you know, 3-2 at Watford, 2-1 at home to Brentford, 2-1 at home to Wolves, drew 0-0 with Burnley, you know, but they are, you know, four wins on the row, basically unbeaten in five in the league. And, you know, you go back to that, you know, when they make games hard for themselves, they lost to Forest, you know, second weekend of January. So they have it in them to you know, upset themselves. But unfortunately, we come at a time where Arsenal are at a good patch. Obviously, they've got Liverpool midweek, like I mentioned a bit earlier, which might help us. You never know. And also, they've got players back and full of confidence. You know, your Bukayo Saka and Alexander Lacazette, to name just a few players who have been playing fantastically recently. You know, Martin Odegaard is basically a younger version of our Coutinho. You know, Smith Rowe actually did come on for some minutes today, and they've also got Nicolas Pepe that they can bring off on the bench. So basically, there's your replacement for Leon Bailey and Buendia. So when you look at it, I think maybe we might. Oh, I was going to say we might have a stronger bench, but that's. That's could be purely down to opinions. It's going to be a tough one. Obviously, with the run of form they're in, with where they are in the league, they're really going to want to push for top four, which they currently are in at the moment, and have a good chance of getting in there. You know, they're three games up. They've got three games in hand on United, West Ham and Wolves. So, you know, they would look to think about them being in the top four. Obviously, with them having that many games in hand, not all of their fixtures have been announced, but I don't think any fixtures will be confirmed after us because it's international break. So it's going to be really tough. I mean, I wouldn't mind losing, but you don't mind losing to the top six teams because you know that we're not there yet. If we can give them a game, or, you know, maybe snatch a point, or even better, snatch a win, even, you know, that would be icing on top of the cake. A brilliant way to finish the, you know, before the international break. But it's always going to be a tough game. But we're gonna have to see. It all depends on what kind of Villa turn up. Because if, you know, the Villa that turned up that was playing Southampton and Leeds, then who's to say that we don't go and win? So it's we'll have to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be interesting because I wouldn't mind having a recall for one match and just get Trezeguet back because he loves a goal against Arsenal. And as always, I'd like to mention AVFCHistory.co.uk that we've got our podcast out on there as well as Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Music, and quite a few other ones. We can listen to us, but we are on that website, and he does throw a couple of stats my way. And the ones he's thrown at me this time, it will be Ashley Young's, if he does play, his 210th Villa appearance, which will be, it's quite a few. I didn't realise he'd played that many times, to be fair. Coutinho's 10th, which is a bit of a milestone, I suppose, and Danny Ings' 20th start for Villa. And the final stat is we've won three of our last four against Arsenal. So we are a bit of a bogey team towards them. Hopefully that will carry on and we get up another win because, like you say, we aren't too far away from, when I say not far away, but we are just behind Spurs, who are 10 points ahead of us. So obviously 3 points against that will help us massively trying to break into that top eight. Exclusive club, which we would love to be a part of. So, yeah, I mean, on that, I just think that basically we've just got to turn up, as you said, the Villa that turn up against Leeds, especially, and Southampton, then if we can play like we did against those and, you know, get an early goal, then who knows what can happen? Because as you've said rightly, that, you know, Arsenal can be leaky and they can, you know, concede a goal or two. So, hopefully we can do that. And also, which helps, we've got a world-class little Phil who's only got to turn it up a few notches and he can give any team a running. So on the back of that, what is your your goal line? Your predicted score?
I'm going to go 1-1.
Oh,
I'm going to stick that for a draw.
Who's scoring new goals for us, especially?
I mean, I'd like it to be Phil, just to kind of put Arsenal in their place because they think they can try and get him.
I'm going to go 2-1. And I think we're going to go, I think we're going to be 2-0 up, and I think there'll be squeaky bum time, and I think they'll score around the 70th. So I have a little bet there, boys. But I think Buendia will score because it was a toss-up between us and them. And then I think Smith-Rowe will score again, toss-up between staying and going. And I think Danny Ings will get the other as well. And the final part of our podcast is obviously Callum has been out with his binoculars on loan watch. So, take it away, my friend.
So, there's a few players that we aren't covering this week because of injury and, not playing and kind of the not relevant players. So, like, Anwar El Ghazi's, Klasinic, still forgot that he was contracted to us. Wesley, Jed Steele, obviously with him being injured. Yeah, Conor Hourihan not being mentioned either this week because he got demolitioned by Coventry. And other youth players, along with like Aaron Reiki, Caleb Chukwuemeka, and Tariq White. And we will touch on Louis Barry, but I still think that he is injured. But we'll start off away from... I'm sorry, we're not going to touch on Trezeguet either because they haven't had a game week in Turkey. So we start off in France for Frédéric Gilbert. Again, someone who's got another 90 minutes. No goal involvements, but he's just helped his side win against Monaco. So obviously they can't be doing too bad in Ligue 1 with, who is it, Strasbourg. I don't actually. They're up to fourth now, actually, in the table, which is fantastic for them. They possibly could get into the Champions League, which would be, fantastic for them. And I also think, no matter what, he will go over to there on a permanent deal because I think there was a lot of rumours going around that Kessler Hayden is bound for the first team, but we'll come on to that in maybe another time or later on. Back into England in the Premier League with Matt Target. Gets his first loss as a Newcastle player. It had to come in his sixth game at Newcastle to have his first loss, which is incredible. And it was against Chelsea in an 89th minute winner for them. But again, he's getting himself in and around. So he's just one of the, and you know, now we've got an injury to Luka Dean. But it shows that his, you know, my kind of mentality wasn't here if he wasn't going to be starting. So it's kind of like, oh, well, do you get rid of him to keep the player happy or do you keep him to make him unhappy and possibly, you know, have bad performances and things like that. Next, we go into the Championship where we look at Keenan Davis, who had a very good weekend this weekend. Just gone. He had two goals in a 70-minute spell for Forest. Beating Reading 4-0, playing against former villain Danny Drinkwater, actually. I reckon he should have stayed on because the player that came on for him, Sam Sturridge, got a goal. So he could have had a hat-trick, theoretically. But that takes his tallies up to four for the season in 13 games, if you include the FA Cup. But he could have had a lot more. And the second goal was, they call it Colin Moore-esque. The Forest fans. Ooh. So maybe go and have a watch of that. And I think I put a post on about it. Oh, and his first goal actually was scored in the 17th second, which is Forest's second quickest goal of all time. So there's a good few stats for you there. But I did put on Facebook that about how well he was doing. And a lot of people said, you know, glad to see him doing well. And also it looks like he's found his level and possibly what, 10 million for him, because I don't think Forest will be able to pay so much, especially staying in the Championship. So I reckon 10 million would be about right, don't you think?
Yeah.
And then going on to staying in the Championship, it's Cameron Archer, someone who's regularly getting 90 minutes now for Preston. He's had 90 minutes now for the last seven games. Doesn't matter if he scored or not, and doesn't matter which team he has come up against. But unfortunately, it was a 0-0 draw with Cardiff at the weekend. But he's still on 5 goals in 11 games, all in the Championship. So he's technically got a better goal-scoring record than Keenan Davis. Staying in the Championship, Jaden Philogene-Badince, unfortunately not part of the side for Stoke against Peterborough. And they probably did need him because it turned out to be a 2-2 draw in the end against Peterborough, who are struggling down their relegation zone. So ever since, well, since Badince has not been in the side, they have or not featured 90 minutes, shall I say. They've lost 3 and drew 2. With him being in the side, they have drew 3, won 1, lost 2. So, and it all just nice for him to continue getting minutes. You know, I reckon he might get another loan move out at the end of the season. Next, we dive into League One, where we go to Kane Kessler-Hayden. As I mentioned a second ago, possible links to the first team for next season to be Matty Cash's backup, which could be the case. It's a big step up, though, League One to the Premier League. But if Gerrard is confident in him, I don't see why not. He's only had one Villa appearance, and that was against Liverpool when all the youth players had to play. But two back-to-back 90-minute games. One was a win against Cheltenham, the other being a 1-1 draw with Wigan. But that would have been a tough game, with Wigan being a tough team to play in League One. Next into League One is Aaron Ramsey. Not involved this weekend for Cheltenham. The first time that he hasn't featured since the end of January, I believe it is. So I think he's getting... I mean, he's not in a... I want to say in and around the team, but he's not been getting 90 minutes since mid-February. He's been getting 70, 60 kind of minutes since then. So hopefully he can continue or trying to keep impressed there. And I am going to touch on Louis Barry because it's Louis Barry, but he hasn't been involved in the last 3 games for Swindon, nearly said Salford, because of an injury. I'm not too sure what the injury is, but I'm hoping that he can be back soon to continue his progression, because that's what he needs to be able to, you know, never to get to the first team, because if we don't know how good he is, then we just won't know to play him. So that's that for all the lone players.
Just before we go, I don't know if anybody's seen it or yourself. Martinez did a little interview with Ben Foster.
Yeah.
And the thing I want to talk about, because obviously you talked about the lone players and obviously Matt Target, I genuinely think when he spoke about players hiding, I genuinely think that was Matt Target. I don't know about yourself, but yeah, it just kind of, because it kind of ties together with the fact that when we played behind closed doors, Matt Target was surreal. He was like close to being England international, opinion. As soon as we get fans back in mind, he kind of went back in himself. So when he's mentioned about a player like being so good behind closed doors and then very poor in front of an audience and kind of went in himself, I took that as Matty Target. But have you seen that, or do you agree, disagree?
I have seen it, but Matt Target has played in front of crowds at Villa Park before. So it's a bit of an interesting one, especially with him, you know, playing every game last season. Obviously, that was mainly behind... Oh, no, that would have been all behind closed doors. The season before, the season that we just stayed up, you know, he played behind... Sorry, he played it in stadiums, in full-capacity stadiums all through the season. So I don't really see how it changes. I mean, it could be Target, it could be multiple players. You just never know, because obviously he's not going to confirm who it really is, because he's not going to kind of be a grass about it. But... I also think that the main thing with Target is that he didn't want to be back up, and he he thought that he was good enough to be continuing as first choice. And, you know, when he doesn't like that, you know, he's kind of throw his toys out of the pram kind of thing and just be like, well, if I'm not being first, then I'm going to move out and move away. So, yeah. But, you know, Martinez, go back to the interview, he did say some great things about the club and the owners and the manager and the squad as well. So, you know, it's nice to see. And we don't really get to see much of that. Obviously, we get the AVTV interviews, but that's done by the club. And, you know, coming from another goalkeeper in Ben Foster, you know, he had some nice things to say about Villa as well. To say that has he been at West Brom and Blues?
Yeah.
So, he knows which team's best in Birmingham.
Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We will be back next week for after the Arsenal game, so we won't be leaving you as long between games. So we'll be doing a review on that. As Callum said, there is an international break coming up. So we will be doing our usual, you know, fill out where it'll be, you know, talking about mad stories in the media, whether we're doing another game, the wiki player, you know, we've got a few things. So if you've got any ideas or anything you want us to do instead of, happy to hear your views. Just drop us a direct message on Facebook or on Twitter, and we will, you know, respond accordingly. But thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you next time. Up the Villa.